Northwest Coastal School District. While you were down here waiting for us, we were in closed session, and we discussed one case of anticipated litigation. We also discussed the status of negotiations with our employee groups. We did not discuss the real property issues listed as B and C on the agenda. Thank you for your patience. Is there any change to the order of business tonight? Anybody? Okay, then we'll just move right into the minutes. Is there a motion? Motion by Mr. Spadafor, second by Mrs. Dickinson to approve the minutes. We have two sets of minutes. Any comments? Okay, and your motions for both?
All right. All in favor?
Aye. Opposed? It passes 6-0. Thank you. And Mr. Millar's not here tonight. He sent his apologies. He's got this sinus thing that's going around. Our next item is a presentation with regard to Cuesta Community College. And I think Dr. Matakovich is going to introduce that. No, Dr. Valentine, thank you.
If I may, thank you. Madam Chair, we've reserved time tonight on our agenda for our colleagues from Cuesta College to share with the board and with the public some items that are of interest to them and I think of interest to the public in general. And presenting tonight will be Dr. Maria Rosenfasser.
Welcome, Dr. Rosenfasser.
Good evening.
Do you need any adjustments made to that?
No, I'm fine. And
okay.
Here's the other trustee who's coming.
Perfect timing.
I am Marie Rosenwasser, the superintendent president of Cuesta College, and President Dan Green and members of the board and Superintendent Valentine, I want to thank you for letting Cuesta come and talk to you about its plans for the future. I'm going to just introduce very briefly, and then the two trustees, Trustee Kirsch and Trustee Mullen, are going to go through the PowerPoint with you. I want to tell you, Board, that in front of you, and I'm sorry I don't have enough, but in your packet is some of the information that led this board to make the decision to put a ballot on the, to put a measure on the June 6th primary election ballot called Measure G. And it is for a bond, a large bond, as you've been reading in the newspaper, a very large bond. We are the only county's community college. We serve the entire county, plus a little bit of Monterey County. That is our district. In your packet is the list of facilities needs, some questions and answers, frequently asked questions, and then, of course, we included something you may have received in the mail in the fall, the report to the community. I want to tell you, board members, that many of the achievements are made by former students of the San Luis High School and Morro Bay High School, and that you send us remarkably good students. They are a delight to teach. So
flattery will get you everywhere.
I'm just impressed with the quality of our performing groups, and I know many of them come from you. But presenting tonight, going through this PowerPoint, Trustee Pat Mullen is the vice president of our current Board of Trustees, and he serves the San Luis Obispo City. I can hear the microphone picking me up. And Trustee Marie Kirsch serves the southern part of San Luis Obispo City and the rest of the South County. And with that, I'll just stand over here and kind of guide Amelia in clicking the PowerPoint, and I'll turn to Marie.
The first item, as you can see, is what are the needs? As many of you know, because you've lived here for a good many years, the campus on the San Luis Obispo campus was built 30, 35 years ago. And although maintenance is trying to keep all the buildings in as good a repair as the finances would allow, we need some renovation and some upgrading. Instructional equipment gets out of date very quickly, and many of our students are trying to work in the labs with equipment that is outdated, and they're piecing together different pieces to make them work. So we want to bring in equipment that is updated. The Board of Governors for the community colleges has declared that the community colleges, and there are 72 districts, have to have what we call matching funds. The state bonds come to us for construction, but usually it's not enough money. Therefore, the community college has to come up with the amount of money needed to complete the project. We have four such projects that we receive state bond money for, but we do not have enough money to start even one of those. When the bids come in, they're considerably higher than what the state has allocated for us. We need, as Dr. Rosenwasser has said, permanent buildings in the North County. We have two more buildings that we need on the main campus. And as she
have students here in San Luis Coastal School District went to Cuesta and anticipate they probably will go to Cuesta. And if it wasn't for some of the foresight years ago in some of the original bonds that were passed that have since been paid off, we wouldn't have many of the facilities that we had when I went there and folks of my generation. So we really do see this, as Trustee Kirsch mentioned, as a vision and building for the future to make sure we have the facilities, both buildings, but also the technology in those classrooms to meet the needs of the 21st century and the students that are going to be coming now and in the years to come from San Luis Coastal and throughout the county. And in part of that, in preparing for tomorrow, we've already updated and had done a lot of our homework, updated the educational and facilities master plans. We've expanded programs and services to meet the needs of the district and the constituents in the district. We've completed a facility condition assessment report. Many of the things that are required prior to looking at whether the need is really there and how great is that need. And Quest has done its homework, has done a good job in reviewing all of those, updating those. And just for the repair and renovation of existing facilities, you'll see is over $44 million. That's just to fix what we have. If you'd like, you can go ahead and some of those, to break those out, the total bond, you'll see the modernization, the $44,700,000 that's needed to fix what we have. As Trustee Kirsch mentioned, the matching funds project, we have projects now that have been approved. We've actually gone out to bid, and when we've gotten the bids back, the cost to construct have outstripped what was originally approved to construct the building. So we've had to reject all bids, and we've had to do that at least a couple of times, even when we've tried to go back and reduce the facilities cost by, frankly, stripping out anything but just the bare necessities, and still we weren't able to do that. We will lose that matching, those matching funds if we don't have local funds, and those are state dollars that have been allocated. We'll lose those if we don't have matching local funds. So that's a critical reason that we also need to go for the bond now. Long-term debt, as a district, you're familiar with the difficulties and the cost to your local budget in servicing long-term debt. By being able to retire some of that debt, it'll allow us to free up money that otherwise has been used to service that debt, and we can use those funds for student services and other uses. Technology infrastructure and equipment, $21,500,000. The technology needs for what it takes to produce a student that's equipped to handle the jobs today are very different, as you know, from what they were even 5, 10, much less 20, and 30 years ago. The technology we have on campus is in critical need of being updated to be able to prepare those students either to go directly into the workforce and have those kinds of technical skills or to be able to transfer onto a four-year university. Site infrastructure that was mentioned, we have $15 million in for the site infrastructure and new permanent buildings, many of those both at the San Luis campus but also the growing North County campus and hopefully a South County campus center. And that's where the total of $310 million comes.
I'm sure all of you have been on committees that have tried to raise funds. Well, Cuesta College has done that also, and the foundation and community college districts that have passed Proposition 39 bonds.
So when it comes to Cuesta, we are not competitive when it comes to state bond projects because we don't have the matching funds that the other colleges have already managed to get. As we have mentioned, the measure that's going on the June ballot is Measure G, so we want you to keep that in mind. We've exhausted all the other sources of funding that we can think about or have come up with. You know, even in the North County, where a number of very well-to-do people helped to establish that campus, and they have given to Cuesta, they too say, now it's time for the others to help us to continue doing what Cuesta is doing. As I'm sure you've read about it, Proposition 39 allows community colleges to issue bonds, and the districts have a $25 per $100,000 of assessed property value. The average assessed property value in San Luis County in 2004-05 was $250,000. So what that means to the taxpayer is a 63% annual property tax increase, and that increase will help educate and train the residents of San Luis Obispo County. That's what we're asking for.
One of the things to keep in mind that at first some folks were confused because of some of the early reports was the difference between assessed valuation and market value. Obviously, in San Luis County, one of the things we all struggle with in retaining good employees here is the difficulty in housing cost. But that's market value, and this would be based on assessed valuation. And that's why the assessed valuation, because many people have owned their homes for years and purchased them when the value was lower. That's why the assessed valuation is significantly lower at approximately $250,000. One of the key things of a Prop 39 bond to ensure the integrity of how the funds are used and that they're used only for those items that are listed is a Citizens Oversight Committee. So this will have a Citizens Oversight Committee that will be made up, as many of you know, of community leaders from different backgrounds. They'll actually sit and review how the bond funds are being used, what they're being used for, and make sure they're used in accordance with what the voters passed, if it's passed. That will help us provide yet another layer for the citizens in this community and in our county to be able to be comfortable that the funds that they vote for will, in fact, be used for the projects that have been identified. They'll also have audits, and all of that will be provided and made public, too. One of the things that we've also had questions, people have wondered what type of education we've done for the district from the voters and what the voters' intent is and what the voters want to see Cuesta College provide. And just a little sampling here, if you look, you'll look at some of the early polling information that was done last May. We tested a bond measure of up to $190 million. We had 64.9% that said definitely yes, they would support it, or probably yes. Those are very strong numbers. It just goes to show.
Is it 66 and two-thirds, or is it 55 that you have to get for this?
55 on a Prop 39.
55, okay. Thanks.
Right. And that's why Prop 39 bonds, because it only requires, shouldn't say only, but requires a 55% approval, requires the Citizens Oversight Committee, and also limits the amount that the voters can approve for assessed valuation to $25 per 100,000 of assessed valuation.
But we have bigger districts, community colleges. That's why it's $25 per 100,000 for a community college district in Proposition 39. Do we still have time to keep going, or do you want to ask us questions?
Do we need to speed up?
No, go ahead.
Oh, okay.
I just wanted to jump in with that question because I know I had it, and a couple of my colleagues, we were kind of saying, do they go 55 or not? So.
Right.
Just thought we would like to know that, but feel free to finish your procedure. I'm not going to cut you off.
We're almost done. Go ahead.
Next. You know, these voter polls told us more than what people would be willing to accept or vote for when it came to the funds. It also showed us that they would support it especially if it included science and technology facilities, almost 80% of those asked, 80.4% to support repair and renovation. And we've already mentioned to you how the buildings need to be repaired and renovated, and 83% to support improving accessibility. And that's what we want to do for the South County, is have classes that can be held, as I've mentioned, during the day, so people who can't come in the evening can come during the day. You know, some parents work in the evening or have their children at home in the evening, but they're free maybe in the afternoon to come and take classes. 81% to support new facilities in science, high technology, computer labs for job skills. That's what people want. They want to be able to develop their skills so that they're marketable to the employers in our area. And we find that voters value Cuesta College. They support the job training and the academic transfer. And they say, but first, fix what you have. And that's what we're going to do. We want to, as I've mentioned, help people prepare and go back to school and retool for job and career training and prepare more students for transfer to universities. You know, the students who have attended Cuesta College and have gone on to universities have become scientists, nurses, teachers, engineers, and our new program is going to be dental hygiene, and that's going to be in the South County.
North County.
I'm sorry. Shows my prejudice. North County.
And that's the...
That's the end of our presentation, and we'd be glad to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you. Mrs. Botwin has a question, and then Mr. Spadafore.
Thank you. Do you have right now that go there that are local? And how many are from beyond, let's say, 100 miles or more away?
14%. The number, the students who come from out of our district is 14%.
This so, fall?
Yeah.
Fall 05, 14% came from out of our district, and most of those from Santa Barbara County.
You know, in California, there was a time when students were limited to their district, but that changed. And as you probably know, students are allowed to go to any community college regardless of where they live.
I think there might, at one time, there was a belief in this community that as many, when I came here, I was told as the new president, 40 or 50% of our whole student body was coming from out of county. That was a total misunderstanding of our new students each year. And that may be only 1,000 of our, not right now, we're serving over 11,000 headcount. Of our new students each year, it's actually just under 40% for fall 2005. We once were at a higher percent. But so that's 40% of 1,000 some.
Thank you for the presentation this evening. I was curious, has Cuesta done demographic projections regarding the student population through this period of time?
Actually,
would you please be sure that you use the mic so they can get you on camera? Because I know the public will want to hear these answers too. Thank you.
I know my voice picks up very much. We have done demographic projections. We're very much aware that K-12 enrollment is projected to stay flat or actually decline within the next 5 years in this county. We know that in terms of our student body, we're serving a larger age range. Part of Cuesta's population right now is the senior population. That is a growing population in the county. That doesn't surprise you, but it's part of our mission to serve the seniors as well as the currently enrolled high school students in concurrent enrollment, the recent graduates, and the returning adults. So in the next 5 years, our projected growth is actually between 1.5 and 2% in headcount. But the other thing that's happening, as tuition went up, students are taking fewer credits because it costs them more per credit and it costs them more for the books and gas.
And then to follow up, and thank you for that, do you anticipate Cuesta providing second educational opportunities for older students who are coming in because of changes in technology? And also, do you think it's going to be more expensive for Cuesta College to provide the technological upgrades that are going to be required with the changes that are taking place?
First of all, right now, we're already providing a significant part of our total student body is the returning adult. That's the phrase we use.
It seems like a lot of attention on the college-age student, but as Dr. Rosenwasser mentioned, you know, our mission really is lifelong learning, and I don't have the percentages, but we do have a very high percentage of returning students that come back for retraining, and that's where having that type of current technology that's used in the workforce to help retrain them is so critical.
Thank you. Mrs. Dickinson?
Thank you so much. I just have a quick question. We came here to this area when Cuesta was military bungalows and weeds, and then they built the new buildings.
Yes.
But, you know, one matter that we were kind of concerned about at that time was that in this area where the average temperature is 70 degrees, every building out there, Cuesta practically, had very few windows and needed air conditioning. And I was just wondering if you're in your new architecture, if you're going to take into consideration, like, you know, environmental things that are going to not require so much of that type of thing. And
One of the key things in upgrading those buildings, as you mentioned, many of them were built, and as we saw earlier, 30 years ago. They didn't have the energy management systems that are in new facilities or that we'll be able to upgrade into those existing facilities. So that'll allow us to be much more energy efficient with the existing buildings we have, and obviously far more energy efficient with the new buildings. They do go through the state architect, so there are specific requirements that the state architect, as you're familiar with, require, but I know those are the types of things that they're trying to build into the bids and the planning. But just even on the technology upgrades, that's a huge energy savings right there.
You've done fine. You've answered the question.
Okay, right. And I think Mrs. Roger has a question.
I just wanted to be sure I understood. What is the life of the bond?
30 years.
30 years. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. We paid off our last 30-year bond. So.
That's good. That's a good point to get out there to the public. Well, we appreciate your coming here, and you know, I know that many of us have been following it, and you're going to make your case to the community, and I can say for myself, and I imagine for my colleagues too, we wish you well.
Thank you for inviting us.
The average age, when you make reference to who comes to Cuesta, the average age of our student is about 27 years of age. So it does escalate above what you think of it being the so-called college-age student. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And we appreciate really what you do for the students from this district. We just recently had a study session where we looked at the percentages going to each school. And it's a real service to our students, those that are going on to four-year colleges, to really benefit from those first 2 years. Sometimes they need that for their maturity, and for financial reasons, they choose to go to Cuesta first, and we know that they're getting a quality education when they do that. So we're glad you're there. And also, we thank you for the efforts that you make to articulate your program so that our students, while they're in high school, can take advantage of them. And I know you've worked hard on that, and we thank you for that. So anybody else? All righty. The next item on the agenda is public comment. Do you have anything, Mr. Unger? Actually, I may have to mention that we have some correspondence first.
Madam President?
Yes. We have another presentation from Slo High.
Yes. March 26th, and they'll be at our school through Wednesday, March 29th. And I would be remiss if I didn't thank all the people that helped make this possible. But it would take me a long time because there are so many people involved in a self-study like this, virtually everyone in the high school community.
that I will just have to give a general thank you to everyone. Particularly, though, I'd like to thank Scott Nairn, who was our coordinator for our self-study, who is one of our fine English teachers at the school. And also in the district office, instructional services is always very helpful to us when we're putting together these self-studies. Particularly, I want to thank Barry Pendley, who is not only the district testmeister, but also the gentleman who really can find data for us when we need help to find the data we can't get for ourselves. So a particular thank you to them. If anything, one of the things about engaging in a self-study like this is that it reveals for me as a principal and for someone who's been at SLO High School for 17 years now in a variety of capacities, just how rich and complex the high school experience is for everyone who's involved in it throughout the community. And on the best days, when I walk away from that school, I just think of it as a kind of a wonderfully radical experience, social experiment. And in our district, because when you think about it, the collaboration of so many people, and in our district, it's an experiment that works. And it works because we all work together, from the school board on down. And I think it's a tribute to everybody in our district that we have such wonderfully successful schools. And again, working on a self-study like this kind of reveals for us, as we peel away the layers of the onion, just how exciting it is and how much is going on, how complex it is, how rich and how rewarding it is. A self-study like this really allows us to do three things. It allows us to honestly identify where we are at our school, and it also allows us to identify where we would like to go, and then ultimately it allows us to identify how we're going to get there. And because we have a very exciting study session coming up on tolerance with lots of students here, I'm not going to take a whole lot of your time to walk you through this whole self-study, and in hope and trust that you'll take some time to look at it on your own later on. But the bottom line for a self-study like this is the same bottom line that we have every day at our school, and I think at the schools throughout the district, and that is, how are we going to improve learning for our students and also to improve the quality of the high school experience in the case of high schools? And that's for all students, for every student who comes to our school every day. And that's what a self-study like this allows us to do. So having said that briefly, I'll just say a few things about the self-study that are specific. First of all, in your binder, I think on the second page, after the cover page, you'll find a schedule of the visit from the WASC visiting team. And I very much want to invite everyone in district administration and on the school board to attend a reception that's taking place on Sunday at 4:15. It'll be in our library. The WASC visiting team will be there. We'll have representatives from our staff, administration, from the school community, and again, all board members and school administrators, district administrators are welcome to be there. Mr. Millar has been on our leadership team, and certainly that will result. We won't know on Wednesday the 29th what our accreditation term is. We hope it will be 6 years, and which is the most that you can get. I'm confident that will happen with or without a three-year visit. That will be up for them to determine. And either way, I'll be fine with that, as long as we get the 6 years, and I'm confident that'll happen. The binder, the self-study you see before you, has a variety of sections, a school and community profile. That's kind of the information about where we are. Also, it includes a summary of the work that we've done since the last accreditation, and based on the major recommendations that were made that time, that's the progress report. It also includes our self-study findings, which is the work done by all of our focus groups and what they determined in response to questions that we are asked to answer that are provided to us by the California Department of Education through the WASC process. Finally, and all of those are about where we are and where we would like to go. And then finally, there's how are we going to get there. And that basically is the action plans that are toward the end of the self-study. And the action plans, the goals that we've identified and the action plans that accompany them will become the basis for our school improvement plan for the next several years. We won't be able to do everything that's listed in those goals in 1 year or 2 years. We'll have to spread that out over time.
But basically, the action plans are the how are we going to get where we want to go? And where we want to go is where I said what I said earlier, which is continued improvement of student learning and in the student experience at our school for indefinitely, a continuous process. The goals that we have identified have to do with our continuing work with helping students who need help with improving their reading, so as they exit high school, they are at grade level and getting them there as fast as possible, with a focus on all of our populations, particularly our EL population, our special needs students, and our general regular population as well, with a lot of detail that you'll find in those action plans, continuing to work on our curriculum and standards alignment and to make sure that we are refining our curriculum. In essence, the curriculum is already aligned, but there's a lot of refinement that goes along with that, with a focus on standards-based instruction and using the infinite amount of data we have to help us working on things like common assessments and also staff development with teaching strategies and many other additional skills that we can provide for our teachers. We have a goal that is focused specifically on helping at-risk learners so that they are able to achieve at the same level of the students who are highly successful at our school. A focus on post-high school education and career planning, and a goal on improving communication. And weaving throughout all of these goals, you'll find a lot of emphasis on technology. That's something that particularly with working with the parents in the community and the communication piece, improved use of technology is something that they are very much interested in. For ourselves, as far as the immediate communication with parents and the community, improving, continuing to develop.
Very much like district assistance, with installation of a database that would allow for electronic attendance and grade reporting, and that the programs are being researched. We've gotten that message from the technology people, too, so we're hearing you.
All right, thank you. We think that would be a great leap forward.
Okay. Anything else in there that we need to see like that? Any other little hints of things coming forward to us? Or did I catch it?
That's a good one. There are others, but okay. Maybe take some time.
All right, we'll hear about them in due time. Huh?
Okay,
good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? All righty. We'll be there at that reception, as many of us as can make it. And Mr. Millar did say that he was coming, so you'll count on seeing some of the board members there if we can do it with our work schedules. All right, the next item is correspondence, and I would like to thank Janice Fong Wolf, I believe it is, for the report on obesity prevention strategies and for the good information on that. Caroline?
I also wanted to mention on the report, I was very impressed with the report, that they did the assessment of attitudes on obesity from leaders in San Luis and board members and so on. In the appendix, if any of you have a copy of it on page, it doesn't have a page, but appendix B, the top suggested categories of all three groups were physical ed, physical activities, and natural physical ed in the school, which I thought was very, very interesting. And they touched on, the groups touched on a great deal. They're looking for grants to deal with the obesity and how to educate. It's a very long, but excellent article that they have included for us here. And one of the things that they touched on, a number of them, is that the as far as education is concerned, as far as the schools are concerned, the physical ed classes that we have in schools could do a great deal to help. And since we do have professional physical education teachers that have, as of 2 years ago, have reestablished a whole program of physical ed. Janice, may I ask you to please look into that some more, that they even suggested going from 2 years of physical ed to 4 years of physical ed, having it involved also with health education a little bit and other things, and sports and so on. But one of their major conclusions in here, I think that most of us know without even thinking about, exercise, and not oversizing meals. And that's what they hit on. And we could do something. If you would contact me or Patty first.
What surprised me about this report is they talked to school board members and city council people and supervisors. I think this report said that nobody mentioned the connection between poverty and obesity in children. I think that was so surprising that no one brought that up because, I mean, that's a big connection there.
Okay, anything else on that report? Then we will move to public comment, and I think Mr. Unger has a comment on tolerance. If that person, Mr. Nakamura, would like to do that now, it's fine, or otherwise in connection with the study session, whatever you prefer. Looks like he wants to take advantage of the public comment period. Would you say your name for the record, please?
Yes, I'm Mark Nakamura. I'm a first grade teacher at Sinsheimer, but I come in the capacity of a parent of a student here in the district. I have a middle schooler at Laguna Middle School and two at Sinsheimer. I know that the topic is on tolerance, and one thing that we have to define is the term tolerance. I know that there's the capacity for or the practice of recognizing and respecting the beliefs or practices of others. My great fear is that those who do not hold the values that is the popular culture sway, a lot of times tolerance becomes a buzzword for accepting lifestyles that are not, that I might not agree with, that are not in the Judeo-Christian beliefs. I feel that there are existing laws now which prohibit all textbooks, teaching materials, instruction, and school-sponsored activities from reflecting adversely upon persons based on race, creed, handicap, national origin, ancestry, etc. There are already laws that prohibit that. SB 1437 would revise the list to include gender defined as actual or perceived, and sexual orientation. Also, AB 606 would give inappropriate powers to the California Superintendent of Public Education to unilaterally withhold state funds from all school districts that don't promote transsexual, bisexuality, and homosexuality, according to his arbitrary standards. If these bills pass, they would make every California school a trans, bi, and homosexual school or suffer financially. There are already statutes, policies, and laws to protect students from harassment, ridicule, threats, or violence. I do not believe that we should, quote, tolerate immoral behavior. I feel that those who do not hold the values that accept homosexual lifestyles or any other lifestyle contrary to Judeo-Christian teaching would be ostracized and disciplined and not tolerated, ironic as it may seem. Tolerance goes both ways. And my fear is that...
Okay. Anything else from the audience at this time? All right. Then we will move on to reports. And... doesn't seem that we have students here tonight. Are there any school staff? Oh, she's down. You're here for the study session. Okay, good. Usually we don't have student reports on the nights we have study sessions, so that's just fine. You can be there in that other capacity tonight. But if you were incognito, we've just blown your cover. Sorry. Anybody from the school sites have a report to the board? All right. Thank you. Then we'll move on to the status of the state budget. Mr. Miller, anything new?
Thank you. A couple of things. One germane to the presentation we had from Cuesta College, in that the state of California's legislature could not gain enough of a majority to pass the governor's requested infrastructure bond. That's not expected to have much of an impact on education, but in addition to that, they also did not put a school facilities bond on the ballot for June. And in education and bonds for facilities, it has to happen in even-numbered years. So 2006, we have the opportunity in June, which is going to pass us by now, or November. And for the purposes of Cuesta's quest, if you will, for additional monies, it's very important to remember that the ability to pass a local bond enables you to gain access to state money. So where their bond issue will present some certain number of millions of dollars, it also gives them access to a commensurate number of millions of dollars of state money. So you can leverage local tax dollars into a bigger pot of money eventually down the road. So what we would hope is for the benefit of Cuesta College that the legislature of California will pass a school facilities bond in November, putting money available that is quickly running out of the current bond issue. Then the second issue for germane to our concerns is the Preschool for All Proposition 82. And that's going to be a allocation of revenue for the purposes of a three-hour program per day for four-year-olds in our community. And it brings forth a few problems and things that need to be worked out. But who could argue with the precept of early education for four-year-olds? And a couple of the issues that we are concerned about is that all of the money will filter into county offices of education, except for Los Angeles County and San Diego County, where they're funneling into nonprofit organizations that will distribute the money on the basis of some criteria that will be established. The other aspect of this is that the money will start flowing almost immediately, but the actual schools won't be established for 4 years. And then there are criteria about the credentialing for teachers, which will have a 10-year implementation timeline. So there's a very long timeline on this proposition for implementation of the full program. And while the money flows and no programs being offered for 4 years.
The audience, you can speak from the table. Everybody's welcome to participate in this. And I just urge those of you that do speak to either speak at the podium or if you're up here at the table to make sure that you have a mic. And that when you're finished speaking, if you could put it down on the napkin and turn it off so that we get a good recording of the session. And we'll just, this is going to be just a very short break so that we can get organized up here. And we'll go off the air for a moment. Thanks. Okay, we're back from the break, and we're going to have a study session on tolerance. And I would, I noticed Mr. Spadafore's mic is down, and I'm just going to call on him and then ask Dr. Matakovich to introduce the session. But his mic's down, so let's see what he wants to say.
Thank you, Madam President. As a representative of the board, I just wanted to welcome everybody who's come here tonight to discuss these issues with us and with the public. And I also, in addition to welcoming you, reassure you that we're looking forward to hearing all that you want to discuss in an open forum. And we appreciate so much taking time to come and discuss this with you, with us, and with the community. And we think it's very important, the study session, in terms of the issues that it represents. And we want you to feel comfortable, and we just want to thank you and welcome you to in your participation with us tonight. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Spadford. Welcome. Tonight, we are here to discuss tolerance. The board has had this as a priority for this year, to have us engage in a conversation that will allow us to talk about our capacity for and the practice of recognizing and respecting the beliefs and practices of others. Tonight, we have participants from across the school district. We have administrators from the elementary, middle, and high school, as well as the district. We have counselors from the elementary and secondary level, psychologists to help us kind of understand how we handle threat assessments, if that is your choosing. We have what we call a critical response team, and we have our program specialists here to address that critical piece to the puzzle. We have a resource officer who works with our students and staff, also teachers from the elementary and secondary level, and wonderful students from the middle and high school level, and we want to thank you for coming tonight to talk with us. We also have community member Becky Jorgensen, and we hope that tonight will be an open dialogue. We have a little input for you in terms of our curriculum. And Rose Fowler. Excuse me, Rose.
I'm excited to be here tonight and just give a brief overview of the foundation that we bring to our students to help keep them safe. And proud to look around the community and see students who were writing essays on tolerance when they were in fifth grade. So it's great that the board's looking at it now as well. In kindergarten, all of our students are taught how to keep themselves safe, personal safety lessons, how to say no, go, and tell if anyone breaks the personal safety rule. That's in collaboration with San Luis Obispo Child Abuse Prevention Council. Our first, second, and third graders learn problem-solving steps and what to do when they get angry, how to calm down. We passed out a few samples of the skills they learn to get along with others, and they may be future board members, so they'll have those skills as well. Then in fourth, fifth, and sixth grade, we continue to look at how to build friendships, how to solve problems, but there's a big focus on what's bullying, how to recognize it, how to refuse it, and how to report it. And I'm very proud that our district has had this curriculum in place for over 5 years. Our students learn the definition, the difference between conflict, which is equal power, two parties can solve it, and bullying, where it's unfair, it's one-sided, it keeps happening, and there's an imbalance of power. So I think we do a good job. We can always, you know, make room for improvement, but I'm proud of our district that that's in place. Sixth graders also learn drug abuse prevention skills through the DARE program. Seventh and eighth graders have lessons through Project Alert. It's a curriculum for drug abuse prevention. And then ninth through 12th grade, Too Good for Drugs and Violence. It's infused throughout their history, English, PE classes. Again, it focuses on how to prevent alcohol and other drug use. And there is lessons on decreasing violence. So those are the safety curriculums that we have in place.
You're following along with a list that we have, and I just wondered if you could tell me what the V/SS means, either one of you.
Violence prevention and social skills.
Okay, and the AOD is alcohol and other drugs?
Right.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
And, yes, you're referring to the packet that we've made enough so all of you should be able to follow along with the information that we have. So thank you for clarifying that, Dana. We have policies to support our staff and students. And Mr. Robinette, you were going to speak briefly. You have in your packet our non-discrimination harassment policy as well as our sexual harassment policy. So,
sure, and I know that you mostly want to hear from staff and students, but just so the board and the public knows, we do have various policies and administrative regulations and procedures for discrimination, harassment, specifically sexual harassment. as well as discipline policies, how to file complaints, the investigation procedures used for complaints. Every year, all of our families are sent home a notification of official information, student conduct code. They're presented in both English and Spanish. And I'm a parent in this district also. I have to confess I don't read all of this every year. But I think there are some underlying philosophies that are probably important to note in these secondary students, with statements such as students must be guaranteed an environment that is safe, and mutual respect is the underlying principle on campus and in the classroom. And I know as you listen to schools and students speak, I hope those underlying principles are form the basis of what we do in our schools. Thanks.
Thank you. Go ahead, Mrs. Dickinson. I think there's a question for you.
Just a real quick question. The California Safe Schools Coalition, that I heard about at the board conference in San Diego, highly recommended that these type of documents not just be sent home, but that that teachers and students receive annual training in verbally on it. Does that happen?
Yeah, I think, and I don't know how the outline is set to be presented here, Dr. Matakovich, but I think you'll hear from the schools how in their various venues, in the elementary schools, in the middle schools through advisory, in the high schools through their presentations, how these things are talked about in the school setting. So hopefully you'll have the opportunity to hear that.
We also have a board policy that deals with threat assessment, and we need to ensure that we have a safe, orderly environment. And so this policy is something that the school principal, along with our school psychologist, provides a way in which to deal with threats that occur on campus in an immediate way. We have our psychologist, Dean Johnson, here tonight. So if you have questions about how we follow those procedures, he's here to handle those questions. We also have a critical response team, and in your packet you have a procedure that they follow to ensure that when there is a crisis, a death of a child, a school tragedy, that we're able to pull a team together made up of professionals. And we have Julie Krakenbrink here tonight, who's a program specialist who's instrumental in working with our critical response teams. So if you have questions in that area, they're available for you. We have our Healthy Kids survey results. We're required to every 2 years have our students take a survey in the 5th, 7th, 9th and 11th grade, and we have, if you would, Amelia, put up the results. We have the results from fall of 2003. Our 2005 results will be out at the end of this school year, but we wanted to share with you what our students are reporting on this statewide test. It's kind of a beginning for a conversation about what they're feeling about our schools. So, Dana, if you would help me with that, please.
Well, not to take up time, and we can all see the different statistics about incidents of being bullied, having knives or guns brought to school, or seeing someone do it. And then in contrast, 61% of our students in fifth grade feel safe at school at all time.
Okay. And then our 7th, 8th, and 9th grade results, if you would, Amelia.
Well, before, can we do the other part
yes,
real quick?
Please, okay. Please, excuse me.
If you'll go back to the second slide. Is that it? Fifth grade?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I think it's important that we look at the protective factors. And children were asked if they felt safe, how many of them felt they had high level of caring. Okay, so again, 2 years ago, about a third of our 7th, 9th, and 11th graders felt or reported being harassed. 19% had been in a physical fight. A quarter of them or less were afraid that it might happen. 7%, 13 and 14% of 7th, 9th, 11th graders admitted to carrying some type of weapon.
Is that at school?
Yes, it is.
At school. Less students at those grades, 7th, 9th, and 11th, felt safe at school. Remember, we're comparing it to 61% of all 5th graders. Less than 10% across the board admit to belonging to some type of a gang. And then when you look at the protective factors of Do you feel that you have caring relationships, that there are high expectations, and that you have opportunities to participate? The numbers go down. Again, it's information, it's data that we then need to use in a focus group to make sense of.
Thank you, Dana. We also have a component which is to involve our parents in this conversation, and we share with you some ways in which we've encouraged parents to talk about tolerance and to support their children as they deal with issues around diversity and creating, you know, we want to encourage our parents to create opportunities for students to interact with people who are different from them. Our schools have a variety of programs, clubs, and experiences that they provide our children. And what I'd like to do is open that up to our school staff, students, to talk a little bit about the kinds of things that happen on your campus that addresses the tolerance issue. So, do I have any takers for openers? Okay, Mr. Jones.
I just wanted to make one comment relative to some of the statistics that were there, particularly talking about the number of students who feel safe at the school. And I noticed at the 11th grade it said 24% felt very safe. What's interesting, during our survey for our self-study for WASC, we asked that question, I feel safe at the school, and the response of students was in the agree or strongly agree category, the total was 78% who felt safe at school. I didn't say very safe, but it said they felt safe. So there's a big discrepancy between the data we just collected last year and the data that's on that that questionnaire. And also, just to kind of add to that, response from parents to that same question, my child is safe at school, either agreeing or strongly agreeing, were 80% of the parents. So it's interesting to compare data between different surveys.
If I may add to what Mr. Jones just said, at Morrilby High School, we've been taking surveys now for 3 years on very similar, and our students have reported on an average over the 3 years that 82% of them feel safe at school. And our parents on an average are saying that 80% of them feel that their children are safe at school. So it's a little bit different than the Safe School Survey. But we do quite a bit of survey taking every year with them and taken directly with students and parents.
Okay, thank you. I'm not sure what order people have put their mics up, so I think maybe I'm just going to let people go, and I think it's going to work out just fine that way. So, board members, go ahead.
I had a question. At some point, I'd be interested in seeing how we can reconcile these figures, because when I look at the safe school figure and I see 24% of students saying they feel very safe at school, that means, you know what, 76% are saying in some relative category, whether it be safe, very safe, that they're not feeling as safe at school as we'd like them to feel. So I'm wondering how we can get to those figures and make them feel at least like there's some relationship to those, because those are significantly different. And also I'm wondering, too, at some point, and I don't need to know today, but how we define safe. Are we defining safe as being physically safe, or are we defining it as being physically safe and emotionally safe at school as well?
I'd like to make a response to that question. When I saw the survey, the question came up with safe, very safe, not very safe at all. There were like five different designations. This survey may have just pulled that very safe category, whereas the survey that you're pulling may be safe and very safe, so that combined statistic may add up to what you're asking about.
I'd like to jump in at this point, if I may. Our superintendent sends us every Friday a packet, and very informational. And this just came this last Friday, and in it was an article from EdCal, Campus Non-Discrimination Policies Examined in Study. And I really want to just throw this out to the students, basically. What they say in part of the article, one small part of the article, they say, more specifically, 94% of districts reported having a policy specifically prohibiting discrimination based on sexual orientation, okay, but only 40% of the districts have policies that prevent harassment based on gender, identity, appearance, or behavior. This means that 60% of the school districts are in direct violation of the California law. Okay, and again, what they're saying that 40% of them did not have any kind of policy that deals with harassment based on gender identity, appearance, or behavior. And one of the things I remember very much one time as a teacher in high school was seeing a girl getting up to leave class, a very pretty girl in my classroom, and probably about a sophomore or a junior, and a really supposedly tough guy turned to her, and he stuck his tongue way out of his mouth, and he hunched forward, and he went waggle, waggle with his tongue back and forth. And she looked at him, and she said, "Jerk," and went on out the door. And I got her the next day before she got to class, and I applauded her. Because what he did was indirectly, was it? Would you guys agree or disagree? Was that some kind of sexual harassment or gender, not gender, but some kind of harassment to do that in front of the class where other people saw it, and it left her, okay, that's what I'm, and should we have policies about these kinds of things? If so, what? How? Thank you.
It doesn't matter because the teachers are all over it, but they don't mind so much if, you know, they do the high school guy thing and say, "Oh, that's so gay. Oh, he's such a fag." You know, they don't care, and they're not about to correct it. No one's going to correct it. And I can sit in class all day. I could sit through about three periods and hear three different classrooms of sophomore, junior, senior guys all doing that, and not a single teacher would even bother to correct it because they're so used to it. And they don't see that as being a problem because they think it's all just something that high schoolers do. And, you know, it really is a problem. And you can talk to the administrators, and they'll say, "Yeah, I hear it, and I think that it's wrong, but what can we do about it?" More of like sort of, there's nothing we can do except sort of slap them on the wrist and send them on their way so that they can do it in their next class. Only this time they're going to say, "Oh, that's so Brokeback," because there's a new movie out.
It sounds as though you find this all very offensive, Katie. Am I reading into your comment? Okay. So then that's an offensive situation for you and probably for many others, and that's something that we need to know about.
I think that you make an excellent point, and I want to say there's one teacher, Roland Dickinson, graduate of San Luis Obispo High School in 1997, who makes kids go outside if they say that's so gay. They have to go outside and be excused from the class for a little bit. So teachers can make a strong stand on that, and I do in my classroom. It takes a lot of effort to extinguish it because, like you say, it's so prevalent, but if individual teachers crack down on it, you know, we could start making inroads on that. So I'd like to encourage teachers to do that and have a zero tolerance for those kind of phrases.
I see other heads nodding out there, too. Go ahead, please.
Hi, I'm Giuseppe DeFronzo, and I go to SLO High. And with our Gay Straight Alliance, we have a group called the Gay Straight Alliance Intervention Group. And whenever somebody says, "That's gay," or "What a fag," the teacher gives them an option, or they call the administrator, and the administrator gives them an option of talking with the Gay Straight Alliance at lunch one day for maybe a half hour just about why that's wrong and how offensive it is, which it really is a form of sexual harassment. I get very offended whenever I hear it. And or they can also do a Saturday work day. And the problem is that, like, a lot of people that I know, I mean, I've asked them, they say they would rather spend 2 hours on Saturday cleaning up school campus than go talk to, quote, a room full of fags for a half hour, one lunch. And that's just ridiculous because all it is, like, telling people how offensive it is and how disgusting it is to speak like that and just act like that in general. And teachers can do stuff about it, but a lot of teachers don't because they really don't care, and some of them even harbor the same views, but they're not...
...are inured to the statement, that's gay. It is going on the elementary school campuses anywhere from the first, second, or third grade. They begin to say this. It's simply a popular put-down when you want to instigate a negative reaction in somebody else. And when we went down to the elementary schools a number of years ago and talked to the kids about it, we found that they say it very freely down there, and they have no idea of its connotation or its implications towards being harassment-oriented. Thus, by the time many of the students reach high school, that is just simply a common way of saying that's stupid. And that's where it has evolved. So letting you know that this starts much, much earlier than the high school. It is a very accepted form, a very accepted comment starting somewhere in the elementary school.
Do you find that it tapers off as the kids get older? Does the conversation with teachers or with the Gay Straight Alliance or, you know, with other students that don't want to tolerate it, does it have any impact in terms of diminishing it as they move through high school?
No, it increases because it is said with a reaction. It is said, in a sense, it's like just saying that's stupid. If somebody walks by and makes a face, somebody might say, well, that was so gay of him to do that. It's just like saying that's stupid, so they don't see anything wrong with it at this level. When they're pulled outside and it's presented to them in the sense that, are you meaning to put down an entire segment of the American population here? And they say, oh, no, some of my best friends are gay. I just say it. I didn't mean anything bad by it. And so, and then it's explained that, well, you're saying that's dumb, wrong, stupid, whatever it is. You're kind of saying that all people that are like that are dumb, wrong, and stupid. Is that what you mean to say? And they say no. And then we say, well, maybe stupid would be a better word to use next time rather than taking a segment of the population in. But it is at that level where it's used commonly in class and in front of me, of all people. They say it in front of me, which knows that class shuts down for 15 minutes, and I give the lecture, and the kids all look at the kid. Not that was stupid of you to say. It was like, oh, great, now we get to hear his lecture on this thing again. But, I mean, they say it there, and they look at me, and they go, oops, you know, and that's how common it is. And so it doesn't decrease as it gets older. I think it increases.
So what I'm hearing is there's a culture of tolerance of that word all the way through the schools. I'm just curious if there is any effort to work with teachers in terms of making them more sensitive to hearing that. Do we do anything in the teacher workshops and in servicing that would help teachers to hear that word and understand the significance of it? Because they may, you know, some of them may just be kind of hearing it so often that they're ignoring it.
My name is Becky Jorgensen, and I'm the president of the Central Coast chapter of PFLAG here in San Luis, and that's Parents, Families, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. We have gone into many schools in this district giving presentations to faculty, staff, and administrators, trying to avoid every single time it happens. My best friend Susan Rotolo teaches at the high school here, and she does the same thing. Every time somebody said, oh, that's so gay, she shuts her class down and they talk about it. And that's what has to happen, in my opinion. It's not acceptable.
Well, we know we can change cultures because words that are used to describe ethnic minorities that used to be common no longer are. They have just been made taboo. So with a conscious effort, you know, people's language can change. So, you know, I'm happy that you're coming forward and that you're telling us this. Maybe you think that we're out of it, and I'm starting to feel like I am, because I really did not know that it was that common all the way through. I know that there was an age group when I would hear this word used this way with my daughter and some of her friends, but it was just a short period, and then it extinguished with that group. But I guess there's a lot of, you know, the lot of it all the way through, and it's not getting extinguished enough to provide a comfortable environment for people. Go ahead.
My name is Steve Click. I'm a retired teacher from a northern district in Alaska, but I'm living down here the last couple, 5 years now. I'm also a member of PFLAG. And this last summer, I had the opportunity to be trained by the National Education Association on two new modules that they have out. One's called Taking a Stand, Creating Safe Schools for All Students, and the other is Walking the Talk, Classroom Resources for Addressing Bias. So when you asked about what can teachers do, what can we do as a school district here, I've made my modules, I've offered them both through the administration, through the local California Teacher Association, your local affiliate here, and also through the community ed, the adult evening classes, and haven't been asked yet to do anything. I'm waiting. But these are, I think, part of the situation is teachers over the years have been trained how to handle situations with anti-bias on racial. They've been taught how to work with religious. They aren't sure about gay, using that in a generic term. They aren't sure how to do that. To shut down a classroom and talk about something, you need to know what you're going to say. If you haven't been trained in that, if you don't have the information at your fingertips, yeah, you're not going to say anything. Or you're going to let it pass, hoping that the other teacher that hears it is going to say something. And I'd like to offer these services. PFLAG gives, as Becky said, gives training, and we haven't hit all the schools. We haven't hit new staff members with that. And also with parent groups, anybody who works with kids. It should be a community. It should be the village working to educate the children, just not the teachers, just not the administrators. So thank you.
Thank you, Patty. I had a question for everyone here. When we looked at some of the figures that were given earlier about issues at school caused by what we're discussing tonight, there were two areas. One had to do with connectedness, which could mean a number of different things, maybe with fellow students, maybe with teachers. The other one was...
I did want to back up on one little thing that you guys were talking about earlier.
Mrs. Botwin, I think Mr. Schellenberger wanted to answer what Mr. Spadafore said. Would you be willing to defer?
I certainly would. Okay. I didn't know that. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry, this is really loud. Just, I think it approaches an answer for you, and this is something that I've thought about, and I kind of made some notes before I came tonight. And I wanted to talk about something that's happening every day in our schools from kindergarten through 12th grade, and I think it's a little different take on some of the conversations that we've had here, but every child that's ever been in an English class or a literature class or a reading class, if you think of all the great authors that you've read from kindergarten all the way up through your high school years or your college years, and you take people like Helen Keller and Langston Hughes and James Baldwin and John Steinbeck, and I'm only listing a few, but if you think back on Flowers for Algernon or, you know, John Steinbeck's Of Mice and Men or The Grapes of Wrath or To Kill a Mockingbird, any of those really great classic literature pieces, there's not a one of them that does not deal with the theme of tolerance. And we're talking tolerance for race, tolerance for mental ability, tolerance for religion. And every day we have those discussions, and they start in kindergarten. And at our school and many of the schools, we have a program called the Guided Process Reading. And the middle word there, process, is so critical because you're good teachers. And I think we have a lot of really good teachers in our district will take the time to process the literature and help the kids understand. They understand theme. They understand conflict, internal conflicts, external conflicts, and they talk about how to empathize with the character and identify with the character so that you know the pain that the kid feels or the character feels, so that you're understanding the author's purpose, and that's to hold a mirror up to life. And it's not always pretty. It's painful. And people who grow up and they are the target of prejudice and intolerance,
these are the characters in these stories. In every kid, every person who reads a book like that steps into the shoes of that character. And I think we're doing a tremendous job with those discussions, and that happens every day in every class from kindergarten through 12th grade. So I don't want you to think that there's this vacuum out there where teachers aren't caring and they're not responding and they're not opening up these big themes, because they are. And I think that kind of answers your question.
I think it does in terms of the overall impact of a certain experience. But I was also looking at the other side of the coin also, is to the issues that students face who are affected by intolerance and what impact that has on their daily trip to the school, as to whether they feel part of an educational process or separate from it, and how it impacts their ability
teach kids to read, and why we hold the literature out as a learning tool. And I think it's really important that kids have those kind of conversations, that they can be free to express themselves and say, I know how that kid felt, I know how that character felt, and I've been there, or my friend has been there. And I think that's real important, and I think it does happen.
Thank you for those comments. And I think Mrs. Botwin and Mrs. Hunter are next. Are you bringing in a new topic, Mrs. Botwin? Or?
No, I'm tagging on to what
you just said. And then Mrs. Hunter?
I agree with you totally. The only thing is, you're talking about the highest point of an English class or reading class, and I agree with you. But there's also the other point. About 30 years ago back in Michigan, the word suck first came into being in the original definition of suck. Some of you kids probably have no idea what the original was. Well, I thought that was a filthiest word when they told you to suck me or suck off or all these other things. So I got so angry at the class that we devised a system. And they didn't care what it meant. They just liked the sound of it, the use of it, and all of a sudden it was brand new into vocabulary here. So we really went, and I thought, don't make a big thing out of this. So I put a bunch of words on the board, like pink tutu, long neck giraffe, and other silly, stupid words. And anytime anybody used the word suck in my class, they had to stop, apologize, and pick one of the words off the board and restate the sentence with that word. And everybody laughed for the first day or two. But by golly, at the end of a couple of weeks, it was gone. We didn't have any more of the suck. And it was out there, but it's not the same thing with all the other words. I've noticed it's always a lifespan. Today, the word suck is so common. And my other comment was that I think this is a very small thing in terms of that kind of language. And most of us, when we say things, aren't always aware that we're saying it. And maybe it's done in the heat of anger. Maybe it's done because we're just sleepy. But one of my speech teachers once said people use a lot of swear words when they can't think of a good word to use. It's so much easier to use a swear word or a stupid word. So consequently, maybe if we just found, if teachers just, this were brought around in some way and teachers could think of it and you guys could think of it, how could we eliminate this kind of problem? If somebody uses a word in the class that you don't like, could somebody go, hey, you know, change the word? Or anyway, some small thing to make us aware of what we're doing. And I think that's probably a lot of what it is. Like you were saying earlier, they were using the word gay because, wait, I didn't mean anything by it. It was just there.
My name is Simone Fouquet. I wanted to mention something about the whole issue of being allowed to say certain words. And I kept on thinking, if somebody says something and it doesn't have a negative connotation, should they still be punished as if they had meant it in an actual negative way? Because what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing today is that even if you say it and it doesn't have a negative connotation, you'll still be singled out and you'll be, that's kind of like, I guess I would put it as being totalitarian and you're not allowing them to think for themselves and you're not allowing them to choose not to use the word. I'm not sure if anybody got what I was trying to say.
Yes, it's an interesting viewpoint, and you know, really, we're talking the First Amendment and respect rather than just the automatic use of the word. You know, I just wonder though where we can find that point where. I mean, I'm just going to say the word because it just makes it so much easier. We all remember when you would hear people say the word nigger. I grew up. I heard that word. I mean, people just used that word. You don't hear that word anymore. That word has just become off limits because it's so pejorative. And it may be that, you know, as our culture changes and becomes more comfortable with different sexual lifestyles, that it's no longer okay to use that as a pejorative. I don't know. The different thing about gay, though, is, as you're saying, gay is not always a pejorative. It could be a description, whereas the other word, the N-word, was always a pejorative and not just a description. So it's more difficult, you know, when people are actually using a word that doesn't have to be negative, and that's what you're bringing up, I think, is that if there's respect, they could still use the word. Mrs. Hunter, I think. And then over here, we have some, Dana.
If I was listening carefully, Mr. Spadafore, and really to talk about the issue that you brought up, and I can't read your name tag, but I think that, you know, tolerance requires education. That's a real big piece of the process. It's not an event. It is a process of teaching folks. And yes, we're very aware that when students are not involved in school, when we look at the 40 developmental assets, when we look at healthy students, it's very important for them to not only be involved in school, and it's not about active participation in the classroom or active engagement. It's bigger than that. That's a piece of it. It's really about being connected and involved in your school, in the decision-making, in feeling that you're a part of that, that you can make a difference there, that you have a role there, that you can create an identity for yourself there, and a sense of family there. And we pay very close attention to that. So we have a number of things in place to try to foster that in students. When we saw this survey 2 years ago, Dana, Francis, and I, and we've been working on assets for, what, about 5 years now or more, we realized we needed to do more. So part of what we do is really look at, you know, how can we build assets in our students as a school community? What are we doing to do that? We went out and we said, well, we need to do more. So Dana went and worked with the Mayor's Youth Task Force to create a grant called Stingers that brought students on board in leadership roles for kids that were probably ones we would consider non-leaders so that they could be more connected in school and take a part. Our student council creates an opportunity for students to do a lot of community service for our school and in the community as a whole. We have numerous jobs in every classroom at our campus so that students have a sense of belonging. So it's more than just participating and sensitive to that and are very much non-tolerant of it. We definitely address it. However, we don't always hear it. Children are sneaky, and they may be more socially, casually comfortable at high school. They're less comfortable at the elementary level. So we are concerned about it. And two other points just to address, I think, Mrs. Dickinson, you had asked earlier about teaching, you know, the information that might be in the district safety policy. I can't say that our teachers take the district safety policy, but our school handbook, which certainly has big chunks of that embedded in it as a part of it, we selectively identify those, and during the first few weeks of school, our teachers pull those out as homework assignments and review those with parents. And they go home, and then in the classrooms, they review that each year. And our teachers also review many of those components at back-to-school night and in handouts and things such as that. And I do want to say, and I can't say that in elementary school when you are trying to survey little children, kindergartners and first graders, cognitively they don't always understand the questions. So I don't have that kind of data that you might have at a high school level that's articulate, but our parent survey last year, 95% of our parents said they feel their child is safe at school. And I think that speaks to some of the issues that I heard at the high school where they're looking at maybe 6% of students. That's certainly a small percentage of our parents that feel their child is not safe at school. Mrs. Gooden, you wanted to grab that. Here you go.
I was just going to tell you, I'm always amazed at the very perceptive adult proximity detectors our students have. In our proximity, they do not use words that are inappropriate, very rarely. But the minute you're 10 feet back, that's where it happens. And I do think the point there is it's more than what we teach. It's the whole community and the whole culture and the whole society. Your example that you used, I think you're not watching much MTV or listening to much hip-hop because that word is used repeatedly in many, many instances. So I think sometimes I feel like we have our little finger in a huge dike, that there's so many things going on in our culture, and you're crying, you're just standing there, a lone person trying to back that up. And I know that the students get more and more comfortable, that may be. I hadn't realized it was comfort. I thought they were just less respectful maybe as they got older, but I know that our students, very different when the adult is near them than when adult is not near them. And the playground is where we have these issues in the elementary school in a way that you don't hear it in the classroom. But I do know we do have it in the playground. On the playground is where you'd see that.
Yeah. Madam Chair, could I? Mrs. Roger, I will defer the floor to you. Fine. Well, I'm looking around the room, and I'm seeing lots of students here. This is a very rare opportunity, I think, to have a meeting where we have this many students here. And I'm kind of interested, number one, why you're here. And I would probably get the answer that someone asked you to be here. But my suspicion also is that you represent some kind of experience in high school that is worth sharing with us, and I wonder if you might do that.
Hi. I'm Rolly Linderito, and I go to Moripo that are new to school. We basically help them to just feel more comfortable, and when you feel comfortable, it's just kind of like we don't really teach tolerance as much, just kind of like we kind of show it as if, oh, it's okay to act that way, feel comfortable, feel free to do whatever you want, and we accept everybody as an individual. So we don't really, I've noticed that we don't really teach tolerance as much, but being a peer helper, I can see that everyone is comfortable around my school, well, at least around me and what I see, and I don't really know what to say, but let's see. Around Morro Bay, it's just no one really fights. I've never seen a fight. I'm a junior, and I've never seen a fight in our school. Everyone argues, but we're fine. But no, I really feel safe in Morro Bay High School. Honestly, I do feel as if we sometimes take our environment for granted. Sometimes we're just like, oh, yeah, I don't like being this school because this and that. When really, we are blessed to have a really, really, really nice environment around us. And the people are just awesome, and everyone's just willing to help. But, yeah, I think it's where we live is awesome. But
I just wanted to go back to what was said over here about freedom of speech and stuff. And I'm a big supporter of the First Amendment. I mean, honestly, without that, we'd be in the book 1984, The Giver, those kind of futuristic ideals. But the thing about it is, like, saying something and, like, not putting a negative connotation on it doesn't make it any less offensive to whoever it was talking about. I mean, if you call a black person the N-word, it's not, and you don't mean it in an offensive way. If you say it around someone, they're going to take it offensively. If somebody says the word fag around me, I get offended, even if they mean it as stupid. And another thing about the First Amendment, it was created to help make more effective communication. But if people are using these words, that's not effective communication at all. I mean, there are a lot of other ways you can describe things that are more effective and get to people. I mean, they strike the chord in their mind more, in depth, I guess, is what you'd say. And it's just that, like, words like fag and the N-word aren't helping communication. They're just hindering it and making it more acceptable for people to just use these crude forms of language. And pretty soon people would just, like, grunt at each other and try to understand what that means. And obviously we're going to have all sorts of misunderstandings, because if you don't and even if like you use a positive connotation on a bad word, it's still, people are going to misunderstand what you meant to say. And it's just, even if they didn't mean it wrong, they should still be reprimanded for saying it at all.
I just wanted to say that I totally agree with what you were just saying. I was whenever I was talking, I was talking specifically about the word gay. And I know that in most classic novels, the word gay can actually mean happy. And so it can mean a lot of very different things, not necessarily a negative connotation. And that word gay is very different from other words like fag and other stuff like that. So I was talking specifically about the word gay because it does have an actual positive connotation to it.
Well, I would just like to comment back on what you said with the word gay and all that. As soon as they, you know, they put a face with it and they just expose it and put it out there a lot more is what it really is, because the way that most kids are being, the way that most kids are using it and hearing it is not the real, you know, what it is actually. So all I think that needs to be done in order to slow that kind of discrimination down is to expose it, overly expose it in the way that's real, the way that what it is. I don't know if that made sense, but
if I could. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, a couple of things. I applaud San Luis High School for having a gay straight alliance, and I'm wondering if we have one at Morro Bay.
It's inactive right now.
It's inactive, did you say? For what reason is it inactive?
Each year, students choose whether or not they would like to have a club at the high school. This year, we've had it for 2 years. This year, the students, there wasn't enough interest, and students chose not to move that club forward for this year. Now, next year, if they choose to, they will. Again, our advisor's waiting, but the kids this year chose not to have a club.
How many kids are required to form a club, Pete?
It's not a matter of how many kids. This year, there wasn't an interest to move that club forward. And it's not something that we go solicit kids. Come on, guys, you got to do this. They chose not to have it.
Okay. And is it Katie? I know my vision's so poor now. Do you believe there is an interest, currently an interest?
I have a few friends at our school who are semi-open with their sexuality at school, and then I have some casual friends who are flamboyantly open and just don't care, and nobody at our school even was remotely interested this year. I was a member last year, and it was fantastic, but nobody was interested, and it was very disappointing. But being one of only two members was not something that intrigued me, considering that it would sort of be like a best friend club. Oh, me and my best friend, two straight girls going and sitting eating lunch under a tree every week. Yeah, no, but we're still on the roster, just inactive. I hope that next year someone's going to move up and take a stand to open it again.
Well, I'm glad that there's an advisor at the ready, and that when an interest is expressed, it will be available at Morro Bay. I'm wondering if anybody in the administration would care to speak to the offer that was presented by PFLAG and our failure to respond to it.
We have had the opportunity to have an orientation by PFLAG at our administrators meeting last year, and we have had an offer, and we have had in services at some of our schools, not all of them. That option was made available
through the high school. That I think my personal feeling is that when someone says that's so gay, it is so unlikely as to be almost impossible that they're talking about fun and happy. It's a derogatory term, and I think that as a district, my opinion is I don't find it acceptable in the classroom. you know, I have a son who is missing a hand. When he was called Captain Hook, that was not acceptable to me, nor was it acceptable to his teachers. And I think that calling someone gay or putting out there that that's so gay is also unacceptable to me as a board member. I think we need to do some training and some teaching. I realize that home also plays a big factor, but we can't deal with every home, but we can deal with every classroom.
Well, you know, I'm not trying to change the subject too much, but I think from my broader perspective, we spent a lot of time talking about the gay issue because that's something that Katie initially started with. But I suspect there are other issues in our schools as well, and some of the things that I know about are religious groups being called names because of their beliefs. I hear anecdotal reports of ethnic groups as well, and so those things concern me too. And so I'm wondering if this, we're spending a lot of time talking about words that hurt people, and my suspicion is that I hope I'm not right about this, but that it runs a lot deeper than just one single issue. That are we as a community, as a school community, being as tolerant of others as we possibly can be?
If I can comment on that, I'm Juan Cruz, and I go to Pacific Beach High School, and we're a much smaller group over there. And from my experiences throughout anything like high school and any of my schooling, anything that has to do with picking is always for acceptance. And I think it goes down to being scared of being accepted and not feeling safe at school. You always have to have a crew. You always have to, like, I've never since, like, fourth grade not been with a group. Like, you always have to have a group, and that's what it comes down to is, and I'm not a very good speaker, so my voice is trembling, but it definitely does come down to being safe, being accepted, feeling safe, and feeling like you're part of the school. And anything that's ever been negative or put downs, gay, putting down another race, putting down, it's all for acceptance, and it's all to be accepted by somebody else. And I think it runs down to being content with school and being having your experience there, you know. So you put down somebody else to be accepted, to feel safe, to have other people look out for you. And that's what it comes down to, I think.
You are remarkably perceptive, young man.
And a good speaker. Or if they go to peer helpers, or is there a teacher? Is there a procedure for complaint? What happens when somebody has a problem like this?
I think also another problem, you were talking about different problems besides like the gay problem. Well, I see one very common at my school is like retards, and it's used just commonly, just like the gay or fag, but also it's used purposefully, and you know how is used to sometimes make yourself feel part of a group or something. Yeah, it's used the same, and it's used also directly towards some of the people because people who use it feel that maybe they don't understand what you're talking about, the retards or the mentally challenged. But I think it's a big problem, and no one really does anything about it because, like, there's no one there for them. There are like peer assistant leaders, but I mean, how no one totally will recognize it themselves, like someone picking on a mentally challenged person and go for themselves to use it. I think maybe teachers should look out for that, or I know it's happening, but maybe a little bit more careful for that problem.
I'm Catherine Kirby, and I teach at Monarch Grove Elementary School.
I just wanted to address the fact that Chris brought it up. You know, this isn't just a sexual thing. I think there's a lot of issues that we're talking about, harassment, mm-hmm. and that's how we have to address it. We have to go through all the different things. It could be verbal. It could be sexual favors. It could be physical conduct that we have with children one-on-one. It could be a group, you know, going after another group of kids. One of the things that we really stress at Monarch Grove is a peace patrol, and our counselor works with those kids, and they're usually a group of sixth graders, and they come onto the playground, and they are used as peer counselors with the other kids. So they come on there. They wear these bright blue shirts. They have peace patrol in the back. So the kids get accustomed to going to a peer and saying, I just had a problem or an issue with this kid. They just called me to, and the peace patrol works it out. And then they fill out a little slip. That goes to the counselor, it comes to us, and often they'll walk the kids right to our classroom and say, Mrs. Kirby, I had a problem with these two kids. They were doing this or that. This is what I told them to do. These are our procedures. And they try and work out the problem through the peer kind of group. And it really helps because the kids feel comfortable. They see a lot of people they can go to. It isn't just maybe the four people that are out there monitoring the playground. But there are 6-8 kids out there with these bright blue shirts that they could walk up to at any given time and get an issue resolved. Our counselor is constantly in our room. She comes in our rooms and does something that you were talking about with the literature groups. And she's gone into fourth grade classrooms that have issues and they've read through a book or a literature book. I know in my classroom we worked on 100 dresses. You know, those are things that you can use and kids can really understand through a piece of literature what you're talking about. So-called Disney great movies have so many little funny sexual things constantly in them. It used to be you go to Disney movie and you go, okay, great, you know, I can sit there and it's wholesome. Now there's so many jokes for adults in those movies that we just become kind of oblivious that they're happening. And it's just, you know, something that happens with society that we have to be more aware of. And I just wanted to kind of just stand up and say from a elementary point of view that when we really are trying, we are working very hard to, you know, make sure that the kids feel safe, make sure that whenever they feel offended, whether it be a sexual kind of thing, whether it be something, you know, physical kind of thing, that we react to it real quickly. And that it isn't, you know, oh, okay, that's all right, just keep on playing, you know, but we actually have steps that we go through. And I think a lot of elementary schools are doing that, and they're doing a very good job. You know, if we're going to do anything, we need to maybe shore up what those steps are, talk about them a little bit more, have more conversations like this, especially within the teachers, within the principals' units, and, you know, so that we're all saying the same thing, we're all using the same kind of words when we're talking to our kids at our campuses, and how do we go about doing that? And that's probably just more conversations like we're having tonight, more discussions.
Okay, my name is Tibbs Escobar. I go to San Luis Obispo High School. So the question of whether or not I could go to a teacher or some administrator for help if I heard someone saying that's gay or that's so Mexican or that's so Jewish, I couldn't. I have absolutely no faith in the administration to fix the problem. I would basically either have to deal with it myself or the teacher would have to have an immediate response to it. Otherwise, I would have to put up with it or find some way to avoid it. And the question of whether there would be the rift between a student and a teacher because of some personal belief or something like that, I don't really feel a rift between me and the teacher. I feel it more within the students. There's some people who in middle school I was like good friends with or something, like good acquaintances. But now I feel that because of our personal beliefs, I can't talk to them. I can't hang around them or anything like that because it's just with the Christian club especially, I can't hang out with any of them. I know one guy named Greg. He said hi to me one day. And the first thing that went through my mind was, why is he talking to me? Because I know he's in the Christian club, and I'm in the Gay Straight Alliance. And after that, I just realized that there was this, almost this like little taboo thing at school where Christian club and Gay Straight Alliance do not mix. And so I think it's more between the students than with the students and the teachers. And another thing about when we took that question, whether you feel safe in the school, I put that I didn't feel very safe at the school. I have no fear of anyone pulling a Columbine at school, I have more a fear of someone verbally harassing me because of my beliefs or because I'm Mexican. That's the only problem that I have. I'm afraid that if I say, don't say that's gay or don't say that's so Jewish, that they will lash out at me. That is what I'm afraid of. And if I hear some of my friends say that's gay or that's Jewish, I can tell them, don't say that. And mostly, like, making fun of them just because of the way they're pronouncing the words or just somehow how they say hello or they say goodbye and they just constantly dissing them. And I'm sitting in the room saying, this is racist, and I can't do anything about it. I'm, like, one of the only Mexicans in the classroom or the only not white person in the class, and I can't do a thing about it. No. Nothing.
Mr. Miller?
I'd like to point out that we do have a policy, and it is in writing, and I think we all have it in front of us, that says sexual harassment defined as the conduct has the purpose or effect of having a negative impact on the individual's academic performance or of creating an intimidating, hostile, or offensive educational environment. So I think we have a vehicle that's in place in writing that's not only board policy, but is also congruent to the state education code. And I think it's a matter of using it and putting a little bit of teeth into that if we want to make a difference. That young man left, and I just appreciate what he said over there so much. You are such a young kid, yeah. But, you know, the retarded thing hadn't occurred to me until he said something. And my own child is a special needs child who comes home. And when I'm trying to help him with his homework, sometimes says, I can't do it. I'm just retarded. And he hears it over and over and over because he's labeled from being in a resource class. And so that labels him. But I think, and to go on with Juan said, kids say things and we're not going to stop it. You know, we're not going to stop. And kids can be very, very mean at certain levels. They're just, that's a part of being accepted into certain groups, is displaying that you can be mean and that accepts you into a group. So they're going to be that way in any case, whether it be through the bulletin, whether it be saying that's gay, whether it be being called retarded or whatever else. But we do have a vehicle in place, and it would be nice if that was some teeth were put into that, similar to what happens when a kid brings a gun on campus. And I know that that's a different situation, but when somebody starts doing this, we don't slap them on the wrist and say, don't do it again. They get nailed with a 5-day suspension because they are in violation of a written policy. And so we start doing that at a level, and then it gets around. And as Mrs. Andreen said earlier, soon the words will disappear. But if you don't make a stand and start doing something about it, and certain people are going to get nailed, then it will continue as long as we look at it as a slap on the wrist.
Okay. I don't want to foreclose anybody. Would you like to speak?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
Please.
All right. And we as the students should not just rely on the administrators to do this, because at a certain point the burden will be laid on us to take a stand and stop letting some people use these words and demean us in certain ways, no matter what race or belief we have. And if we just stand and do not tolerate this, eventually it will not go away completely, but we can make it go away to a certain extent.
Would you like to speak?
Yes, I would. Question is, what latitude do staff members, faculty members, teachers, administrators have to use a teachable moment when those come up, when the words are used, whatever words for whatever group is being put down? Is it taboo? Is it not able? Is the teacher not able to go in at appropriate grade level, appropriate, you know, level of the student's understanding, and give a reason why those words or that discuss that, you know, whatever's being said or done is inappropriate? Or does the teacher need to go back to the curriculum and say, oh, you'll have to go home and ask your parents about this? That's not a question that we can ask or that I can talk about. In other words, is there intervention without education, or is there just no intervention because there's no education?
I saw Mrs. Matakovich pull hers down, and Shayla, is that you two? All right. Go ahead, whichever one wants to go first.
Are you speaking, Shayla? That's all right. I just would like to say that the teachers I know and work with take the opportunity to interact with the students on the important things, and I would trust their judgment to deal with them as they surface. So that's something certainly we can reiterate, but it's important that when you have a moment to address an issue that you do with your class, and I've observed that consistently.
My name is actually Shannon, but that's all right. I think I'm a very good example of the result of inaction to just stop things that are being said. Right now I am shaking, and you could describe me as a very timid, a very shy, quiet person who sort of fades into the background, but I didn't used to be that way. When I was younger, I was a very strong person. And I wouldn't let anyone give me crap for anything. But, well, no, that's not true at all. But what I mean is I've always gotten crap from somebody about something my whole life since I've been young. And at first it didn't get to me because I had that natural, like, attitude. But over time it's really worn away at me and my character, and nothing's ever been done about it. And there came to a point where I couldn't do anything myself. I started to believe everything that was being said. And so I became very empty, very sad, a shell of what I once was. As overly dramatic as that sounds, it is true. And so I just want to say that it isn't fair to me and anyone else to have their personality and their life altered by other people's opinions. I know you can't change people's minds, but you can stop it from reaching the ears of someone else. So that's all I would like to share with you.
Thank you. Is there anybody else? Dr. Valentine?
Well, if I could, it looks like we're beginning to wind down right here. And I, too, want to thank all of you for coming here, for the students who have the courage to come forward and share some very personal experiences, to staff for bringing forward your efforts in this area and your optimism in this area. I think, and Mary Lou, you may have alluded to this, but I think that if we look at it, at society and the world in general, it really isn't a model of the way we want to be, which sort of raises the question of where is there a model of the way we want to be? And if it's not in our schools, then I don't know where it's going to occur. I feel optimism to the extent that I think the discussion is going on in our schools. I think that there are points in the curriculum. I think as the kids get older, there are points from peer to peer where students are attempting to deal with the issues of other students. Students are attempting to deal with the pain of other students, that teachers are attempting to deal with those things. I was reading in the San Luis Obispo student newspaper about a debate between the Gay-Straight Alliance and the Christian Club. I think those dialogues are healthy. I think they're always going to be uncomfortable, and I think they're going to activate sore spots in us, but that the dialogue is very, very important. And I'm optimistic that our schools at least are providing some opportunities for those conversations to take place, and I hope tonight is another example of it. I'm also pessimistic because there is no amount of student pain that is acceptable. There is no amount of non-acceptance that we can accept as being a part of our community. We want to be as inclusive as we possibly can be. And so as long as there are students who are hurting because of either our behavior as adults or because of the behavior of other peers, I would hope that we would dedicate ourselves as a school district to making that a little better.
I think we may be at a good stopping point, but I just have to say one thing. As someone who grew up in the 60s during the time when women were becoming liberated and bringing about changes in language that were more respectful of women, and growing up during the Civil War, or excuse me, Civil Rights Movement, when changes were brought about. The Civil War, God, I'm not that old. But when changes were made in language, I think that the cutting edge right now is the gay-straight issue. And the movies are reflecting it, and, you know, people are thinking. And they might still be saying stupid things and hurtful things, but I think people really are starting to think about this. And the fact that maybe they're using the word brokeback, you know, maybe that's a step in the right direction, because at least, no, it's not. Okay, well, there goes my little fantasy. But I'm old enough to have seen things get better in certain ways. And I think if you folks do keep talking about how it hurts and how it upsets you, whether it is your ethnicity, your religion, and also your sexual orientation or that of your friends, it does make a difference. And you're not going to change everybody all at once, but you will make some changes and you will help people to think. In return, though, remember not to use the labels back at other people, because the labels can be used the other way, too, against people who play sports or against people who are intelligent or against people who are too social or just different in some way or another. And that the labels hurt in both directions, and that it's really important for everybody to think about the power of those labels and to try to be sympathetic to the impact that they have. I'm just really happy, and I'd like to thank Mrs. Dickinson for putting this on the agenda.
I want to say one thing. I just wanted to say to each one of the young people, I think you're beautiful and articulate and valuable, and we're so glad that you came. And I was sorry that four people left. You know, I was so glad Dr. Valentine spoke up, because that's what I wanted to say too, is we want to hear from you. So keep speaking out, and you can be a leader maybe in your groups to, you know, to speak out for understanding and not letting those kind of things happen, and kind of take your groups that protect you to new levels. But each one of you, thank you so much for coming, and we love you.
Thank you. Before we conclude this portion of the board meeting tonight, I just wanted to suggest a couple things and to see if this has any traction, if it could go anywhere. I don't have any answers for all of these issues because they're so multifaceted, and I think a lot of people are making as much effort as they can in their roles to do something about intolerance in at every level. But I grew up in a small Italian community in Utah, and the school district had a embedded policy that 1 week in October, the school would close and everybody would go deer hunting. So in that community, it meant so much to that school district that the kids could go with their parents and go deer hunting that they took a whole week off of school. A lot of people would think of that and say, boy, you know, that's an interesting use of time to go get a gun and kill an animal. What could we do, you know, in a week? What could we achieve in a week that might be a little better than slaughtering a poor, helpless deer running around the mountainside? So what I'm asking is that we don't just end this tonight, and I appreciate that it was brought here, and I think it's important that we discuss it, but it has to go somewhere. Everybody brought a story. Everybody brought an experience. Everybody brought something that has been either a positive or negative in terms of helping someone or being the subject of something that's hurtful. So what could this mean to us as a school district? Should we have a week that has an hour a day on the issue of tolerance, and we set it as such a strict, such a policy that it's an awareness that everybody can see very clearly that it's important? Do you do that at the beginning of the year? Do the students help you, the staff, prepare a week for an hour a day where you touch upon this and the whole school becomes part of it so they realize that it is critical, that everybody believes in it? It's just not once a year or once every 5 years we'll talk about it and somebody can come and, you know, grab a microphone and say, this is something that's been affecting me. So I would ask that the staff and that the students and the administration think about what next. So everybody who came tonight doesn't feel like your effort was just limited to a couple of hours in front of the school board, that you use your energy, you use your commitment, you take these feelings that you have and you add them to something that'll make a difference. Because I truly believe that all, everybody here, teacher, staff, student, has something to give to this issue. So my hope is that it go on to something that's concrete and that everybody in this district knows that it's important, that it's critical, and that there's going to be an educational process surrounding it. So in Utah, they take a week to go deer hunting. Maybe in San Luis, at the San Luis Coastal Unified School District, they take a week for 45 minutes a day during that week to accentuate, underscore how important it is for tolerance to be the rule, not the exception. So I just leave that, and I thank you all also, like Ms. Dickinson did and the rest of the board, for coming here tonight. It took a lot of courage, and it was very, very helpful for us. So personally, I say thank you for this.
Thank you all. And if you'd like to leave now, we understand the rest of the agenda is pretty routine. You can always get in touch with a board member if you want to through the district office. Mrs. Holmes knows how to contact us and can get a letter to us. So if you have something else you wanted to say but weren't able to say in this format, please do so. Thanks, everybody. Have we got camera? All right. Our next item is the resolution dealing with our positive certificate of adequate funding. And we did have a presentation on this last time. I'm not sure if we need a lot more from Mr. Miller, but do you want to just give us enough so that we can feel comfortable voting on this one?
Actually, I'm not going to have much to add at all, except for to remind you that we are in a position to guarantee that we will have funds to adequately address our needs for the next 2 years.
And I would move approval of resolution number 110506, understanding that the item was presented to the board on March 7th and no changes were made to this board item at this time.
I second it.
Okay, motion by Mr. Unger, second by Mrs. Botwin. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Resolution. Oh, we have to do a word roll call. Thank you.
Mr. Spadafore?
Aye.
Mrs. Dickinson?
Aye.
Mr. Unger?
Aye.
Mrs. Andreen?
Aye.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mrs. Botwin?
Yes.
Thank you. It passes unanimously. Item number 4, an adoption of a fee with respect to construction impact mitigation. Mr. Parker? We had this last week, too, so you don't have to do much. Just
I was going to make a motion that we accepted, Brad. Unless you were talking. Oh, I would like to have you, if there's any big disturbances about it, would you give that, bring that information back to us? Otherwise, I'm going to move that we, is this another one?
We don't have any public here. I'll just point out, Mrs. Botwin, so perfect. Go ahead with your motion.
Okay.
There doesn't seem to be anybody here who wishes to speak to this.
Okay.
So go ahead.
We approve the attached resolution number 12607, authorizing an increase of our development impact fees to the level one maximum approved by the State Allocation Board.
Second that.
Okay. Motion by Mrs. Botwin. Second by Mr. Unger.
Mr. Spadafore.
Yes.
Mrs. Dickinson. Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mrs. Andreen?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mrs. Botwin?
Yes.
Okay. Moving right along, item 5 is open enrollment priority for staff at Pacheco Elementary School. And this is a discussion item tonight, and the board is asked to provide direction.
That's correct.
Dr. Matakovich, do you want to say anything about this?
Yes, very briefly. The inter-district open enrollment policy allows students who reside within our district to apply to enroll in any district school. This policy allows our district's school staff the opportunity to apply for their own children to attend the school of their choice and receive admission. This is the case for all staff except Pacheco Elementary School. Pacheco Elementary School, as you know, is our two-way foreign language school, and there is a lottery enrollment requirement. So the Pacheco staff participates in this process, and by chance, their child, as a kindergarten student, may be selected through the lottery to attend the school. What the Pacheco staff is asking is for consideration for placement of their children in their school. This would mean that after the open enrollment period closes, that their applications would be included in the first phase of student placement, along with the siblings of current Pacheco students. So they are requesting to enjoy the same privilege that other school district staff enjoy right now, and that is to have their children attend the school where they teach. So we ask the board to provide staff direction.
Madam Chair?
I'm just going to allow Mr. Unger, because he has showed me that we have a written comment from the public on this, and then I'll come to you, Mrs. Botwin.
And this is a statement that was given to us by Dina Naus, who I believe is a staff member at Pacheco. She was unable to stay for this portion of the meeting, and so she had a written comment to the board that she'd like read. She says, open enrollment priority for staff at Pacheco. I would first like to thank Dr. Matakovich for presenting this item to the board. I've been a teacher at Pacheco for 9 years, and I now have a future kindergartner whom I would very much like to attend Pacheco in the fall. As you may know, the Pacheco Dual Immersion Program benefits greatly from staff who have been there and therefore know the program well and believe in it. Priority for teachers' children to attend Pacheco is one way to encourage teachers to stay at Pacheco. As a district employee, I would like to have my child attend the school I teach at, a privilege that is currently denied by the lottery. I strongly encourage the board to direct staff to make procedures that allow children of Pacheco staff to be enrolled during the first phase of student placement.
Thank you. Mrs. Botwin?
Say that to me, this is a kind of a clear-cut thing that I thought we might just make a motion on this instead of providing staff with direction at this time. How the other board members feel about that?
Mr. Spanifor?
I just had a question. Does this have any impact in any other aspect relative to other families or teachers or anything? I mean, does the impact of passing this have any effect? Is there adverse effect anywhere with this?
Not that I'm aware of.
That's all.
And the numbers would be small, I assume.
Right.
Dr. Valentine's nodding. Mr. Unger?
Yeah, I have a couple of questions, too. We know that Pacheco is the only school that has a lottery at this time. Is this going to be a more generic, are we thinking about a more generic board policy for... If a school, for some reason, did go to lottery, would the teachers in that school, other than Pacheco, be given first priority for the kids at their school? So is this something that we would make more of a generic policy? And does this apply to all staff at Pacheco as well, is another question I have. And so I know there are teachers that have a great interest in this. Are we also saying this is the same for custodians, secretaries, and people like that? Are we going to give, is this only going to be school specific? So in other words, if say a teacher from C.L. Smith School wanted to place their child at Pacheco, are we making it site specific to the site where you teach and where your child would attend only? So Pacheco, C.L. Smith, C.L. Smith, Monarch, that kind of a question. And I guess really that's, I know we handle this through open enrollment, and this isn't an issue at this time, but you know, at some point in the future, we might decide we want to do magnet schools, say a magnet school of the performing arts or something like that. And so I'm wondering if, instead of singling out Pacheco, we need to look at this as a board policy in general. And so that would be my question.
I appreciate your bringing forward those questions. And
You know, we might want to think about how the motion should be worded if we are going to go ahead tonight, or are you saying that you'd feel more comfortable if we gave a little time to settle?
I have the questions, and I guess if we're going to be approaching this as board policy, which I suspect that this would have to be a board policy, then how are we going to have the board policy written? Because that would be ultimately what we would vote on. I think the direction might be to staff to come forward with policy or administrative regulations or however we'd want this done. That would be my request, and that I think direct staff to come up with something like that would work district wide as opposed to just Pacheco.
Dr. Matakovich, did you have a response?
Yeah, we haven't thought of a generic policy, so that's something to consider. Pacheco is, of course, unique in this case, and we would be looking at our administrative regulations because that's where the procedures are for the open enrollment policy rests. But we have talked only about granting it for teachers. Staff under the current open enrollment policy, the intra-district policy, those teachers that live within our district and staff enjoy the opportunity to apply under open enrollment, and we're able to accommodate all of the open enrollment requests across the district for all staff. So just to be aware of that. And so being school specific is we are looking at addressing the needs of this.
I guess the way I'd like to see it addressed, depending on what the pleasure of the board is, instead of specifying Pacheco, perhaps we could specify in the language a school at which open enrollment is impacted by a lottery or something like that, so it addresses it generically throughout the district.
I have a suggestion. I thought your questions were very good, Chris, and certainly cover more territory than we had or I had just by looking at this. But I think at this point in time, I would like to go ahead and make a motion and pass this, being specific, because I want those parents to have to get their kids. They want to make the arrangements for what those kids are going to do.
Okay.
Meanwhile, while we go ahead, either pass it now or bring it back if you want in the next consent agenda or whatever, then go ahead and work on a policy for eventually that we do have other schools involved. But this is site-specific, and I think we should keep it that way for now.
Okay, Mrs. Dickinson?
Since it's just asking for direction, does this mean that you don't need a motion on this? I mean, is this sort of like a courtesy that you want our opinion, but you have the authority to do whatever you want on this? That's what it sounds like.
We're certainly seeking your direction. And so you've made some suggestions relative to our ARs. And certainly we are within the window of the open enrollment period now. So we could bring it back to you with a little modification and for your consideration to vote on at the next meeting.
I'll just weigh in, and then Mrs. Rogers wants to also. I like the idea that it not be limited to teachers, but that it extend to other staff at the site. And I like the idea that it be specific to Pacheco, because I don't see any reason to draft a broader policy that has no application beyond that site. I would probably wait and kind of do like the courts do and only decide things that have a real impact. So my weighing in would be make it specific to Pacheco, but not specific to the teaching staff.
And I just wondered when the period of open enrollment ends.
April 6th.
So if we wait for the next meeting to create a policy.
AR.
Or AR. An administrative regulation. How does that impact anybody, the woman, the teacher who wrote this, who will have an incoming kindergartner, is she going to miss that window of opportunity?
The April 4th is the next meeting, and the period closes the 6th, and then we begin the process of reviewing the applications.
Can I get the sense of the board? Mr. Spadafore, I don't want to foreclose your comment, but just while he's talking, think about whether you want to do something tonight or whether you want to wait.
No, I was just thinking about something that's a little bit of a hybrid, is that we find out the board's sense on Pacheco tonight, but then ask the staff to bring back a suggestion covering what Chris is talking about. Yeah. So let's give the staff members across the board at Pacheco the opportunity as soon as possible, if we all feel that way, to do this, because I'm sure it meets a lot of their needs in terms of travel and work spots and children, giving them some certainty. And then follow Chris's idea. Thank you.
And so I think the board in general wants it to apply to all staff, not just teachers, and at least Pacheco at the earliest opportunity. And if you feel that there's anything else that needs to be brought back and, you know, that's more general, at the next meeting. Is that okay with everybody? Okay.
May I just to summarize that administrative regulations can be changed administratively, and largely that's what happens. But this seemed to have implications beyond the typical administrative regulation. We wanted to bring it to you. We can change the administrative regulation tomorrow to capture the sense of the board, and we can let you know about the broader directions that we might go as well. And so maybe that'll shorten the time frame that we were worried about.
I see consensus on that. All right. Thank you for bringing up those questions, Mr. Unger. Number six, the five-year California deferred maintenance plan. First reading, Mr. Parker.
The California deferred maintenance plan provides matching dollar-for-dollar funding for major maintenance activities in school districts in California. To access those dollars, we have to have a plan in place. We currently have a plan in place, which is a few years old. This plan presented this evening for the board's review is an update of our previous plan, which is currently active. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. I can explain the plan a little bit more, or maybe perhaps it was self-explanatory.
I think Mrs. Roger has a question, and Mr. Spadafore. Go ahead, Mrs. Roger.
Mr. Parker, you and I spoke earlier today, and I had a couple of questions that you answered totally to my satisfaction, but I thought that maybe I would pose them so that my fellow board members could, if those questions also came up for them, that they could be satisfied as well, and anyone at home who's interested. In the maintenance schedule, my questions were, if we are aware that we have asbestos and lead paint, why are we not moving? Why are those items in the fifth year so that they can be, a space can be created for them? But why are we not taking action in each year to really move forward toward correcting those problems?
The real short answer is that they're not hazardous. To explain further, with respect to asbestos, all of our facilities have been inspected, and all of the asbestos has been certified and cataloged in our asbestos report, which is available at every school. Those areas where there were asbestos in the schools, which represented anything other than a very low hazard level, have either been abated already, encapsulated, or enclosed. The only asbestos that's remaining represents a very, very low levered level of possible exposure, and the experts say it's best to leave it in place. We place placeholders in the fifth year for asbestos removal should we have to go in and remodel or do a slab repair, in which case we would be breaking into an area that's already encapsulated or of no hazard, in which case then we've got the funding available to abate that area when we have to work on it. With lead paint was phased out, I think, beginning 20 years ago. Most paint anywhere has some level of lead in it. Our schools have lead. The buildings downtown have lead. Your house has lead in the paint. A lot of it's on the very base layer because it's been painted over. The key is with lead paint is to inspect and avoid chipping or peeling paint in areas where there might be primary or preschool students. That is the key safety factor, and we inspect our schools regularly for that. We also inspect for any peeling paint, but primarily in the younger grades, where a child might be tempted to take chips of paint and put it in their mouth.
Thank you for taking the time to answer that yet again.
You're welcome.
Okay, Mr. Spadafore.
Something that I wanted to thank Brad and Jeff, who's not here tonight, which is connected to this in a very thin way, but several years ago, the district partnered with the community to improve fields, as an example, by the users, the youth groups, and that's still part of the updated maintenance. And I just wanted to bring that up here because I'm sure a lot of people may not be familiar with that, but that's a program that you and Jeff worked on with the community, which provides funding for upgrading and maintenance of
fields. It's been very beneficial in trying to keep our fields rehabilitated and in the best service that we can for the community as well as our students.
And I just wanted to make a quick comment about the grand total of potential five-year deferred maintenance is $20,893,000. And I think people, I just would like to point out that when folks think about schools, we usually think about teachers and books. But we have an awful lot of infrastructure involved in teaching our students and making sure that our students are safe. And to continue to make sure that our facilities are in good repair for our students to learn is not a cheap proposition. And this certainly demonstrates that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So we'll look forward to having that come back for approval next time.
Yes. Thank you.
All righty. Do you want us to approve it tonight? I bet we're ready to, if it makes things easier. Okay. Motion?
I move approval of the five-year California Deferred Maintenance Plan.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Unger, second by Mrs. Dickinson. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 6-0. Okay, next is the consent agenda. I'll call out the items. Let me know if you want them pulled. Number 7, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Pull. Number 8 is certification of temporary athletic team coach qualifications and competencies. Number 9, approval to teach a class outside of credential authorization. 10, approval of secondary school schedules. 11, approval to pay board members' salary for permissible absence or alternate meeting. You want to abstain, Mrs. Dickinson?
Sure.
Okay. So that's pulled for her to do that, be outside the motion. Number 12 is donations to be accepted. 13, disposition of surplus property. 14, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 15, approval of purchase orders. 16, education technology plan. Okay. And number 17. Anybody want to pull that one? Okay, then a motion.
I move approval of items 8 through 10, 12 through 15, and 17.
I think 9 was pulled, wasn't it? No, 7. I'm sorry, I couldn't read my own writing. Okay, so the motion by Mr. Unger, and second, anyone? Second by Mrs. Botwin. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 6-0. Number 7.
I just had a quick question for Rick Robinette. I was curious, under the hiring of a bus driver substitute, new hire, transportation.
Yes.
Is that in response to what you addressed the board regarding a couple months ago in terms of trying to increase bus driving?
This is a substitute position, and we are at the point of doing oral boards for the bus driver operations service worker, so we're moving ahead on that position. The board authorized 5 positions, but this is a substitute driver, so okay. It's not the same.
That's all I want to know. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Robinette. Motion, Mr. Spadafore?
I'd like to make a motion that item number 7 be approved.
Second?
Yes.
Motion by Mr. Spadafore, second by Mrs. Botwin. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 6-0. Number 12? Was it 11? Yeah, I'm sorry, it's 11. I didn't write very well on these lists. Yeah, it was pulled for Adrian to abstain so that she could vote on the other motion. Then she can vote on the rest of the motion. Anybody want to move to approve?
I'll move to approve item number 11.
Okay. And second by Mrs. Roger. I'm tired. I'm sorry. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? It passes 5-0 with one abstention. And the last one is 16.
Thank you. I wanted to ask a question of Ms. Samoes, if I could, please.
Sure thing.
Thank you. Being a newer board member, there's one thing that I'm not always certain about, and that's if some of the discussion we have at study sessions gains any traction or has any effect in long-term planning. Back when we had the study session and we discussed the plan for the technological programs and for the money and investment, we talked about the potential or the possibility of investigating bilingual websites to help monolingual parents. And then we also talked about programs with the community or other programs to rehabilitate computers and try to help students who don't have computers at home to enhance their the educational process. Mm-hmm. Two things. Do you believe those have any merit in terms of ongoing study or implementation in your projected plan that you now have before the board? And if they do, has anything happened in relationship to that? Does that make sense?
Yes, okay. Absolutely. Thank you. Specific to your question on the providing computers for families who are in need, I did actually follow up on that, and I think that's part of our plan. One of the things we can do in our community partnerships goal on page 16.6, goal 3H3, and that would be the second benchmark, is partnerships that would be pursued among parent and business communities on an ongoing basis. So I did speak to our facilities clerk, and we are pursuing the possibility of working with our recycler who picks up the surplus equipment to see what we can do to assist in rehabilitating the equipment, if possible, to then disperse to families who have an interest. There's a fine line there in working with families who are perhaps on free and reduced lunch, and confidentiality matters. So we have to be careful how we distribute the equipment and to do that in a confidential way for families who would like to access it.
So there is a sense that if it's possible, providing computers at homes where they don't exist enhances the students' learning ability?
Yes,
capacity.
I think we all agreed as a committee that would be a great project to undertake. So we'll keep you posted on that. In terms of the contact information that you passed on, I have already spoken about that in our director's meeting. So we're going to follow up with that district that has some bilingual website opportunities available for parents, and also as part of our research with the student information systems, we're inquiring to see what they have as part of their existing package that would address that as well.
I appreciate that information.
You're
and
welcome.
The development of that program, the development of that goal, I think is wonderful, and it's going to be so helpful for the students. And it also is helpful for myself. I can't speak for the other board members to know that some of the discussion does have some traction or does connect in certain ways with what is being planned or directed. So I appreciate that, too. Thank
You're
you very
welcome.
Much.
Thanks. We'll follow up and keep you posted. Thank you.
Thank you. Motion?
I make a motion that item 16 be approved.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sure.
Amelia, I don't recall. Are we on a 3-year replacement cycle for our computers?
For computers, it's 4 to 5 year, depending on the age, and servers every 5 to 6 years, switches and routers, part of that equipment that's in the infrastructure, every 7 to 8. So it's going to depend on the age.
So a 4-year-old computer would be very serviceable in a home?
Yes, I believe
for,
so.
For student use,
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes, absolutely. And some of those computers we're actually maintaining in the classroom. They've been surplused and removed from the network because they may be a security risk with worms and viruses and that kind of thing, since, for example, with Windows 98 computers, as of the end of June, Microsoft no longer supports Windows 98. So while we're removing them from the network, we will still continue to make them available in our classrooms for students and teachers to continue to use, which they can do, and or the option of going ahead and removing them from the classroom and hopefully then working with our new business partner. We're going to pursue that.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Motion by Mr. Spanifor. Is there a second? Mr. Unger, second. And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 6-0. Advance agenda. Mr. Unger.
Yeah, there are two things I'd like to suggest for advance agenda. The first is something we have on the agenda items not yet scheduled, and it's a board self-evaluation. And I realize that we're really busy for the next couple of months, that we've got budget issues coming up. But I would like to ask that we move this one toward the front burner. There have been questions about the process for choosing how closed session agenda items are presented, which is a discussion that I think we need to have in open session. I think just in general to talk about what our board strengths and weaknesses are, it would be a good thing for us to do, and so I would ask that we move board self-evaluation to a more critical point in our agenda. And the other thing that I'd like to, if I can get some support for that, I would like that. And the other thing that I'd like to suggest is going back to the correspondence that we received this evening. One of the things that I got out of the obesity report was that the community needs to work together to look at solutions for childhood obesity. In the future, I would like to recommend a board study session about childhood obesity, and we've had some good luck with our study sessions recently, and I would like to actually make it a study session, but I'm thinking probably a community forum, because that was one of the recommendations that came out of that, and so something we've never done before, but something that I think might be valuable for us to explore.
I second that.
Can I say something?
You bet.
In terms of board self-evaluation, we had that retreat in the summer. Don't you think sometime in the summer would be a good time before the year revs up to look at ourselves? And I think that would be natural.
I'm happy to do it whenever. I'm just saying that I would like to see us move forward on that, recognizing that we have a pretty full plate between now and the beginning of the next fiscal year.
When I on the childhood obesity conversation, we will be bringing to the board a wellness policy. I don't have the specific date, but in the next meeting or two or three, May 16th, we're bringing that forward. It might be a good time because it is a direct response to the concern over childhood nutrition, obesity, activity, and those kinds of things. The question, I guess, would be the format of that, and I don't know whether we want to discuss that as in the president and clerk meetings or whether there's a preference you want to state as a board.
I would suggest, because it's so late, that if members of the board have requests on how they want that presented, they get it to Mr. Unger or me, and we will do that through the regular meeting. Is that okay? All right. Yes. All righty. And then the last thing is reports by board members and district administrators. Mr. Spadafore.
Thank you. I just wanted to take a brief second and read a letter from a student at Pacheco School that was sent to me after we did, was it Read Across America? And I wanted just to read this because I think it says a lot. It begins, it says, "Thank you for coming to our school to read to us. I really liked it. I hope you did not have anything important going on when you came to read to us. My favorite part in the book was when the north wind makes the ships," this is a third grader, "sink. Another part I liked was when the sun makes the cape fall off the man. The pictures are very colorful. I hope you come again to read to us. And I think this letter says a lot about how important it is for reading and how much the students appreciate this. Mm-hmm. But I think it also talks to how important it is at home, and I don't mean to preach, but to take the time to even read very short stories to our children, grandparents reading to children. But it was a very thoughtful letter, and I thought about how important that is in terms of reading to the students. That's it. Thank you.
And I just, a couple of things. First of all, I know that several of our schools are busy getting ready for their distinguished school visitations. And I know Del Mar, and I believe Sensheimer is the other school that is looking forward to that. I think they're both happening next week, and just I think on behalf of the board, we wish them well, and they're both well-deserving schools of that honor, and we'll hopefully be hearing about that in about a week. The second thing is just a plug for my favorite band, Morro Bay High School Jazz Band, is going to be opening the Yacht Club Sunday at, I believe, about 9:30 or 10, so it should be pretty fun. It's always pretty fun out at the Yacht Club.
Morro Bay Yacht Club?
Morro Bay Yacht Club in Morro Bay.
That's open to everyone?
No, but it's kind of fun. So. You can kind of stand out and listen to the band play and see the kids. They're really good, and it's kind of fun. We've had beautiful weather. And then just several of our bands, both from San Luis and Morro Bay, and choirs are going to the big jazz festival in Fullerton next weekend, so that's pretty exciting for everybody. And I know they're all looking really forward to it as well.
Mm-hmm. Mrs. Botwin?
Thank you. I have two little things. One is not so little. I have a crink in my neck from turning it to the right. Dr. Valentine, I'm going to put this in your hands, that we will not have any more straight tables in the future, that they be angled. I'm looking down here, and there's so much going on down at that end, and it's so important. Okay, so please, in the future, otherwise we'll come in and manually take these tables and move around. The other small item I have is recently, as of this past week, ROP, the computer animation and modeling class, has been approved for UC elective credit. And the ROP animal science has been approved for UC elective credit. ROP is doing its job, guys. We aren't yet. Thank you.
Anything else?
Okay.
Who's going to make the motion? All right. Done. All in favor. Let's go home. Thank you, everybody that stayed.